Layer 735, FDR and Japanese Internment Interactive. FDR and Japanese-American internment. Today, the decision to intern Japanese-Americans is widely viewed by historians and legal scholars as a blemish on Roosevelt's wartime record. Following the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, the FBI arrested over 1,200 Japanese aliens throughout the United States. Over the next several weeks, President Roosevelt received contradictory advice about further action. FDR's military advisors recommended the exclusion of persons of foreign descent, including American citizens, from sensitive areas of the country as a safeguard against espionage and sabotage. The Justice Department initially resisted any relocation order, questioning both its military necessity and its constitutionality. But the shock of Pearl Harbor and of Japanese atrocities in the Philippines fueled already tense race relations on America's West Coast. In the face of political, military, and public pressure, Roosevelt accepted the relocation proposal. The Attorney General acquiesced after the War Department relieved the Justice Department of any responsibility for implementation. On February 19, 1942, President Roosevelt signed Executive Order 9066, granting the War Department broad powers to create military exclusion areas. Although the order did not identify any particular group, in practice, it was used almost exclusively to intern Americans of Japanese descent. By 1943, more than 110,000 Japanese Americans had been forced from their homes and moved to camps in remote inland areas of the United States. The documents contained in this selection are from the collections of the Franklin D. Roosevelt Presidential Library and Museum and are intended to reflect the many sides of this issue. The rest of the descriptions in this exhibit consist of a series of documents and book quotes about this subject. You may continue listening to these quotes or press the right arrow key on your audio tour player to exit this layer of information and continue with the rest of the tour. Document 1, J. Edgar Hoover to Edwin M. Watson, December 10, 1941. FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover routinely forwarded information for the President through military aide and Presidential Secretary General Edwin M. Pa Watson. This December 10, 1941 letter and accompanying map show the locations of the 1,212 Japanese aliens considered to be disloyal or dangerous that were arrested by the Bureau within 48 hours of the attack on Pearl Harbor. Additional maps gave the locations of the 620 German and 98 Italian aliens taken into custody. Document 2, Memorandum of Summary of West Coast and Honolulu Reports by J. Franklin Carter, December 16, 1941. A former news reporter and columnist, J. Franklin Carter, was a part of President Roosevelt's informal intelligence network. Carter had connections around the world with diplomats, government officials, the press, and business executives, including Chicago businessman C.B. Munson, who was sent to the West Coast to assess the situation. This December 16, 1941 memorandum from Carter to the President summarizes several earlier reports regarding the espionage threat, the reliability of other formal intelligence gathering agencies, and the loyalty of Japanese Americans. Document 3, Memorandum from James H. Rowe, Jr. to Grace Tully, February 2, 1942. Assistant to the Attorney General, James H. Rowe, Jr., was the most ardent critic of the proposal to relocate and intern Japanese Americans. He denounced the proposal as unconstitutional and believed that it was being forced on the administration by public hysteria. In this February 2, 1942, memorandum to the President's private secretary, Grace Tully, Rowe warns the President of the growing public pressure and the constitutional issues involved. Document 4, Memorandum to the President from Attorney General Francis Biddle, February 17, 1942. This memorandum from Attorney General Biddle to President Roosevelt was Biddle's last best attempt to steer the president away from the massive immediate evacuation and internment of Japanese Americans being proposed by the military. In this memo, Biddle clearly tries to limit the Justice Department's involvement in relocating American citizens, while at the same time warning Roosevelt not to bend to pressure from Congress and from the public outcry being created by outspoken columnists Walter Lippmann and Westbrook Pegler. Lippmann had recently written that nobody's constitutional rights include the right to reside and do business on a battlefield. And in a widely read column, Pegler had declared, "The Japanese in California should be under armed guard to the last man and woman right now, and to hell with habeas corpus until the danger is over." Document 5. Letter, Senator Harley M. Kilgore to President Roosevelt, February 19, 1942. This letter from Senator Harley Kilgore, a Democratic member of the powerful Senate Committee on Military Affairs, is an example of the political pressure to deal with the issue of Japanese Americans on the West Coast that Roosevelt was receiving. The letter was received by the White House the day after Roosevelt signed Executive Order 9066. Document 6. Letter, Budget Director Harold D. Smith to the President, February 19, 1942. Following established procedure, the Bureau of the Budget reviewed the final executive order prescribing military areas as drafted by the Justice and War Departments. In this letter, transmitting the executive order to the President for his signature, Budget Director Smith makes reference to the personal conference held at Attorney General Francis Biddle's house on the night of February 17, 1942, at which the Justice Department finally acquiesced to the issuance of the executive order as proposed by the War Department. James Rowe assisted in the revision of the language to ensure that the Justice Department would take no part in the implementation of the order. Document 7. Text of Executive Order 9066, authorizing the Secretary of War to prescribe military areas. This press release, containing the text of Executive Order 9066, was issued on the day after Roosevelt signed the order. The original executive order is located at the National Archives in Washington, D.C., as part of Record Group 11, the General Records of the United States Government. Japanese-American internment book quotes. Supreme Court of the United States, Korematsu versus United States, 32 U.S. 214, 1944. Citizenship has its responsibilities, as well as its privileges, and in time of war, the burden is always heavier. To cast this case into outlines of racial prejudice without reference to the real military dangers which were presented, merely confuses the issue. It is said that we are dealing here with the case of imprisonment of a citizen in a concentration camp solely because of his ancestry, without evidence or inquiry concerning his loyalty and good disposition towards the United States. Our task would be simple, our duty clear, were this a case involving the imprisonment of a loyal citizen in a concentration camp because of racial prejudice. Regardless of the true nature of the assembly and relocation centers, and we deem it unjustifiable to call them concentration camps with all the ugly connotations that term implies, we are dealing specifically with nothing but an exclusion order. To cast this case into outlines of racial prejudice without reference to the real military dangers which were presented merely confuses the issue. Korematsu was not excluded from the military area because of hostility to him or his race. He was excluded because we are at war with the Japanese Empire, because the properly constituted military authorities feared an invasion of our West Coast and felt constrained to take proper security measures, because they decided that the military urgency of the situation demanded that all citizens of Japanese ancestry be segregated from the West Coast temporarily, and finally, because Congress, reposing its confidence in this time of war in our military leaders, as inevitably it must, determined that they should have the power to do just this. There was evidence of disloyalty on the part of some. The military authorities considered that the need for action was great and time was short. We cannot, by availing ourselves of the calm perspective of hindsight, now say that, at that time, these actions were unjustified. Robert Asahina, Just Americans, How Japanese Americans Won the War at Home and Abroad, Gotham Books, 2006, pages 264 and 265. The roundup of Japanese Americans that Roosevelt delegated through the War Department went far beyond the accepted powers of the government to intern foreign nationals and resident aliens. Most of the 110,000 evacuees from the West Coast could not have been interned under any interpretation of U.S. law because they were citizens. And the Isai, the first generation of immigrants, among the larger group who were not citizens, even though they had lived in the United States for decades, had been barred from citizenship by law for decades. In this key respect, they differed from German and Italian immigrants who faced no such barriers. Executive Order 9066 actually gave the government even greater authority than martial law. Unlike internment, which had well-defined legal procedures and boundaries, and unlike martial law, which was meant to apply universally rather than single out Japanese Americans, the exclusion, evacuation, assembly, relocation, registration, segregation, and distribution of Japanese Americans were almost completely open-ended and unconstrained. Policies and procedures were invented month to month and enforced with an arbitrariness that should have alarmed and should continue to alarm both civil libertarians on the left and opponents of big government on the right. Gene Edward Smith, FDR, Random House, 2007, pages 549 to 552. On February 19, 1942, in one of the shabbiest displays of presidential prerogative in American history, Roosevelt approved Executive Order 9066, authorizing the forcible evacuation of persons of Japanese ancestry from the Pacific coast. Racism fed fears of sabotage. For 50 years, anti-Japanese sentiment had pervaded the social structure of the West Coast. Politicians jumped on the bandwagon. By the end of January, the entire California congressional delegation, as well as Democratic Governor Colbert L. Olson and Republican Attorney General Earl Warren, was clamoring for removal of the Japanese. Japanese evacuees were forced to liquidate their property at fire sale prices. The U.S. government made no effort to secure fair prices, guarantee land values, or ensure the safety of goods placed in storage. "I am not concerned about that," FDR told Treasury Secretary Morgenthau on March 5, 1942. Estimates of Japanese property losses exceeded $400 million in 1942 dollars, the current equivalent of almost $5 billion. After the war, Congress provided a meager $35 million in reparations. 40 years later, another Congress awarded each surviving detainee an additional $20,000. Though Roosevelt said he later regretted the burdens of evacuation and detention which military necessity imposed on these people, he showed no concern when he signed the measure on February 19th. Greg Robinson, By Order of the President, FDR and the Internment of Japanese Americans, Harvard University Press, 2006, page 257. The president did not conduct the internment alone, and he should not be saddled with the entire burden of guilt. Nevertheless, Roosevelt failed to transcend the prejudice around him in his direction of public policy. Because of his early training and experiences, FDR was ready to believe that Japanese Americans posed an indiscriminate threat to national security, and he persisted in this belief without ever attempting to check the credible information to the contrary. He also deserves censure for not providing moral and constitutional leadership. Although his duty as President of the United States was to protect the constitutional rights of all citizens, he repeatedly subverted the rights of those of Japanese descent. His decision to sign Executive Order 9066 was made casually, with no consideration or weighing of the racial or constitutional implications of that action. After he ordered the evacuation, Roosevelt effectively stripped the internees of their property and possessions, but he did not offer any restitution or just compensation for their financial losses. He did not consider instituting immediate loyalty hearings, even though the government later took the position in court that the loyalty of Japanese Americans could be so determined. And finally, Roosevelt bears a special measure of guilt for his inability to project any real sympathy or consideration for the concerns and interests of the interned Japanese Americans. FDR made little effort to defend the internees from the stigma of disloyalty in the months after Executive Order 9066 was signed, and he took no recorded steps to improve conditions in the camps. To the right of where you're standing is a panel that reads, ER and Internment. These people were not convicted of any crime, but emotions ran too high. Too many people wanted to wreak vengeance on Oriental-looking people. There was no time to investigate families or adhere strictly to the American rule that a man is innocent until he is proven guilty. Eleanor Roosevelt, draft for an unpublished magazine article. Eleanor Roosevelt opposed internment and tried to stop FDR from issuing Executive Order 9066. Concerned about the potential hysteria against Japanese Americans, she visited Japanese American communities and praised their patriotism. But when she discussed the issue with FDR, he was unmoved. ER did not speak out publicly against her husband's decision, opting instead to work quietly behind the scenes. But many in the Japanese American community knew of her sympathies. In April 1943, she visited the Gila River relocation camp in Arizona. She was impressed by the character and perseverance of the detainees. In a report to FDR, she urged him to relax the order and allow detainees to return to their homes. ER's report helped convince FDR to explore releasing some with work permits. By the end of 1943, one-third had been released from the camps. It would not be until January 1945, however, before the executive order was rescinded and all the internees were released. You will now be automatically redirected back to wherever you left off in the base message.